California Dreaming by Joan Didion. Every weekday morning at 11 o'clock, just about the time the sun burns the last haze off the Santa Barbara Hills, 15 or 20 men gather in what was once the dining room of a shirt manufacturer's mansion overlooking the Pacific Ocean and begin another session of what they like to call clarifying the basic issues. The place is the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions, the current mutation of the Fund for the Republic. And since 1959, when the fund paid $250,000 for the marble villa and 41 acres of eucalyptus, a favored retreat for people whom the center's president, Robert M. Hushins, deems controversial, stimulating, and perhaps above all, cooperative, or our kind. If they just want to work on their own stuff, Hushins has said, then they ought not to come here. Unless they're willing to come in and work with the group as a group, then this place is not for them. Those invited to spend time at the center get an office, there are no living quarters at the center, and a salary, the size of which is reportedly based on the University of California pay scale. The selection process is usually described as mysterious, but it always involves people we know. Paul Hoffman, who was at one time president of the Ford Foundation and then director of the Fund for the Republic, is now the center's honorary chairman, and his son is there quite a bit, and Robert Hutchins' son-in-law, Rexford Tudgewell, one of the New Deal brain trust, is there. Why not, he asked me. If I weren't here, I'd be in a rest home. And Harvey Wheeler, the co-author of Failsafe. Occasionally, someone might be asked to the center because he has built-in celebrity value, e.g. Bishop James Pike. What we are is a group of highly skilled public relations experts, Harry Ashmore says. Harry Ashmore is a fixture at the center, and he regards Hutchins, whereas the president of the center is inflexibly referred to in the presence of outsiders, Dr. Hutchins, as a natural intellectual resource. What these highly skilled public relations experts do, besides clarifying the basic issues and giving a lift to Bennett Cerf — my talk with Paul Hoffman on the coast gave me a lift I won't forget, Bennett Cerf observed some time ago — is to gather every weekday for a few hours of discussion, usually about one of several broad areas that the center is concentrating upon at any given time. The city, say, or the emerging constitution. Papers are prepared, read, revised, reread, and sometimes finally published. This process is variously described by those who participate in it as pointing the direction for all of us toward a greater understanding and applying human reason to the complex problems of our brand new world. I have long been interested in the center's rhetoric, which has about it the kind of ectoplasmic generality that always makes me sense that I am on the track of the real souffle, the genuine American kitsch. And so not long ago, I arranged to attend a few sessions in Santa Barbara. It was in no sense time wasted. The center is the most perfectly indigenous cultural phenomenon since the Encyclopedia Britannica's Syntopicon, which sets forth the 102 great ideas of Western man, in which we also owe to Robert or Dr. Hutchins. Don't make the mistake of taking a chair at the big table, I was warned sotto voce on my first visit to the center. The talk there is pretty high powered. Is there any evidence that living in a violent age encourages violence? Someone was asking at the big table. That's hard to measure. I think it's the Westerns on television. I tend, to agree. Every word uttered at the center is preserved on tape, and not only colleges and libraries, but thousands of individuals receive center tapes and pamphlets. Among the best-selling pamphlets have been A.A. Burl Jr.'s Economic Power and the Free Society, Clark Kerr's Unions and Union Leaders of Their Own Choosing, Donald Michael's Cyber Nation, The Silent Conquest, and Harrison Brown's Community of Fear. 75,000 people a year then write fan letters to the center confirming the staff in its conviction that everything said around the place mystically improves the national and, in fact, the international wheel. From a Colorado country day school teacher, I use the center's various papers in my U.S. history current events course. It seems to me that there is no institution in the U.S. today engaged in more valuable and first-rate work than the center. From a California mother, now my 15-year-old daughter has discovered your publications. This delights me as she's one of those regular teenagers, but when she curls up to read, it is with your booklets. The notion that providing useful papers for 8th grade current events classes and readings for regular teenagers might not be at all times compatible with establishing, quote, a true intellectual community, another Hutchins aim, would be considered at the center a downbeat and undemocratic cavil. People are entitled to learn what we're thinking, someone there told me. The place is in fact avidly anti-intellectual. The deprecatory use of words like egghead and ivory tower reaching heights matched only in a country club locker room. Hutchins takes pains to explain that by an intellectual community, he does not mean a community whose members regard themselves as intellectuals. Harry Ashmore frets particularly that men of affairs may fail to perceive the center's practical utility. Hutchins likes to quote Adlai Stevenson on this point. The center can be thought of as a kind of national insurance plan, a way of making certain that we will deserve better and better. Although one suspects that this pragmatic quayism as a mode of thought comes pretty naturally to most of the staff at the center, it is also vital to the place's survival. In 1959, the Fund for the Republic bequeathed to the center the $4 million left of its original $15 million Ford Foundation grant. But that is long gone, and because there was never any question of more Ford money, the center must pay its own way. Its own way costs about $1 million a year. Some 12,000 contributors provide the million a year, and it helps if they can think of a gift to the center, not as a gift to support some visionaries who never met a payroll, but as an investment, tax-exempt, in the preservation of our free way of life. It helps, too, to present the donor with a fairly broad-stroke picture of how the center is besieged by the forces of darkness. And in this effort, the center has had an invaluable, if unintentional, ally in the Santa Barbara John Birch Society. You can't let the fascists drive them out of town, I was advised by an admirer of the center. Actually, even without the Birch Society as a foil, Hutchins has evolved the E equals MC squared of all fundraising formulae. The center is supported on the same principle as a vanity press. People who are in a position to contribute large sums of money are encouraged to participate in clarifying the basic issues. Dinah Shore, a founding member, is invited up to discuss civil rights with Baird Rustin. Steve Allen talks over ideology and intervention with Senator Fulbright and Arnold Toynbee, and Kirk Douglas, a founding member, speaks his piece on the arts in a democratic society. Paul Newman, in the role of concerned citizen, is on hand to discuss the university in America with Dr. Hutchins. Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, Arnold Grant, Rosemary Park, and another concerned citizen, Jack Lemmon. Apropos of absolutely nothing, Mr. Lemon says, pulling on a pipe, just for my own amazement. I don't know, but I want to know. At this juncture, he wants to know about student unrest, and at another, he worries that government contracts will corrupt pure research. You mean maybe they get a grant to develop some new kind of plastic, Mr. Newman muses, and Mr. Lemon picks up the cue. What happens then to the humanities? Everyone goes home flattered and the center prevails. Well, why not? One morning I was talking with the wife of a big contributor as we waited on the terrace for one of the center's ready-mixed martinis and a few moments chat with Dr. Hutchins. These sessions are way over my head, she confided, but I go out floating on air.